Welcome to the June 2026 News Bulletin podcast for Yacht and Small Craft Marine Surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our podcast with an introduction from IIAMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear member and fellow maritime professionals, when I first took up my role as CEO all those years ago, it never dawned on me that I would make so many good and lasting business friendships with many IIAMS members. But at last month's Western Mediterranean Large Yacht and Small Craft Working Group, held at Palma, Mallorca, it was like being back amongst old friends, and it was great to catch up with familiar faces. This working group meets annually and has been doing so for many years, and although the attendees are usually recognizable individuals, with a few newbies turning up, there is always so much to talk about and share, as was the case this time. This networking and its importance, bringing surveyors together, can't be overstressed. In my opening comments, I said that it felt like coming home at the end of a long day and easing into my favorite pair of old slippers. It was an excellent event, and I am grateful to all who contributed over the 2 days. Announcing awards and recognizing exceptional contributions to the marine surveying profession are always pleasing. So, in my introduction to this month's news bulletin, I have pleasure in announcing 3 honors. In no order of preference, IIAMS has recognized the contribution of 3 exceptional maritime professionals. They are Nigel Cox, who has been awarded a fellowship, Joel Lloyd Pinero, who also becomes a fellow, and Joe McWilliam, who has been given an honorary fellowship. You can read the citations for the aforementioned men in our online news bulletin, and they will be formally recognized at the IIAMS annual general meeting scheduled for Tuesday, 2nd of June. There's still time, just to make arrangements for that event, and I hope you will consider joining us from 2 to 4 p.m. UK time, as we broadcast live from Murrell's house. There's no need to register, and it is a great opportunity to better understand the inner workings of the Institute. All are welcome to attend. You can also find out more, including the login details, in our online news bulletin. One of the items and initiatives I plan to announce at the AGM relates to the specializations that are published on each individual's listing on the IIAMS Surveyor Search app and website search. Primarily, I have 2 concerns. The first is that when someone searches for a surveyor, the information displayed should be accurate. And in some cases, it is not. The management board has determined that the term specializations is to be withdrawn. It will be replaced by the term surveying experience. By that, we mean the types of surveying activities that are regularly undertaken by a member on a daily or regular basis, and not those that they may occasionally undertake from time to time. It is important for the Institute to do all it can to make the search results accurate. The second point is about the surveyor's own reputation. By effectively advertising a surveying activity through the IIAMS search facilities that is no longer within their scope, it could lead to personal reputational damage. So, if you are an IIAMS member with specifications on your listing that you have not reviewed and updated for a considerable time, you are urged to do the responsible thing and check as soon as possible. It may be that there are some activities you are no longer engaged in and others that you have now acquired the skills to do. And my final thoughts on this year's upcoming AGM. We are changing presidents. After 2 years as president, it is time for Captain Ruchendale to pull up his anchor and sail forth. Mike Proudlove will assume the mantle of president, and David Pestridge moves up to vice president. I would like to put on record my personal thanks to Ruchin, but also on behalf of IIAMS members too. He has been great to work with and has greatly contributed to the IIAMS over the past 2 years. The month of June remains one of the busiest in the IIAMS calendar, and this year is no different. Tomorrow's AGM is preceded by the quarterly management board meeting that morning. The following week we have a stand at the SeaWork show in Southampton. I hope to meet many members on our space on the Workboat Association stand, Hall 3, stand number WB6, will find us. Please do come and say hello, and our friends at the Workboat Association may even be able to rustle up a complimentary cup of coffee. From there we head straight into our DNV, ISO 9001 annual audit. Usually a one-day affair, this year we have chosen to enhance our certification to bring our certifying authority into scope. That adds another level of auditing and complexity, so we have 2.5 days to get through this year. And finally, many congratulations to IIAMS Membership Secretary, Rachel Moores, who got married last month to Brad. From now on going forward, she is known as Rachel Locke. Survey well, Mike. For our first story, the IIAMS Western Mediterranean Large Yacht and Small Craft Working Group met for its annual 2-day event at Palma, Mallorca at the time of the Palma International Boat Show. The event brought a selection of familiar faces as well as some new ones. Many thanks to John Walker and Tim Rowe, both of whom are resident on the island, for helping to source speakers and bringing the event together. Held at Escuela del Mar away from the crowded city center, delegates benefited from a varied collection of presentations. Mike Schwartz opened with an overview of IAMS activities over the past year. He was followed by local yacht captain, Andrew, who spoke about his experiences when struck by lightning. Being struck once is unlucky, but Andrew has been struck twice. Jeff Waddington joined the event remotely and spoke at length about some of the crazy and devastating things he has seen on survey over the years, sharing many photos. Following a pleasant lunch on site, the group heard a presentation from Craig Norton with his current take on AI and its effect on the surveying profession. Fraser Noble, chair of the IAMS Certifying Authority, brought the data and end with an excellent overview of the new MCA Sport or Pleasure Vessel Code and its challenges for code examiners. Day 2 dawned as Roland Perry opened proceedings. He spoke eloquently and knowledgeably with reference to the new Sport or Pleasure Vessel Code, but with particular reference to dealing with safety management system aspects of the new code. Marine engineer Andreas Faller was next to present. Andreas has an encyclopedic knowledge of engines, transmission systems, and their controls and maintains rigorous ongoing training with leading manufacturers, and this proved to be an excellent session. Mike Schwartz wrapped up the event by giving a non-technical presentation entitled, Lithium-ion Battery Fires, What We Know So Far. The outcome was an excellent event, and judging by the feedback, one that was enjoyed by all. In our next story, finishing in under 6 hours, IAMS member Catherine Linley ran the virtual London Marathon My Way in support of Sailors Society, our chosen charity. Catherine said, I am a professional mariner who no longer works at sea. I know what it means to work long hours, far from home, keeping a global system moving that most people rarely notice. World trade depends on maintaining a skilled, resilient pipeline of seafarers. And seafarers depend on having the right support to do their jobs safely, sustainably, and with dignity. That is why we chose to run this marathon in support of Sailors Society. Thank you for all you do for the seafarers. Sailors Society is now gearing up for its Fansipan challenge later this year. The aim of this challenging trek is the summit of Fansipan at 3,147 meters, the highest mountain in Vietnam. This two-day trek is open to maritime professionals and takes place in November. You can help Catherine hit her fundraising target and find out more about the Fansipan challenge via the news page of our website. Up next, an entire class of students from the Boat Building Academy in Lyme Regis, UK, has been awarded the Rising Star accolade at the Classic Boat Awards 2026. The September 2024 cohort of the BBA's 40-week boat building course made history when it became the first to feature a 50-50 male-to-female ratio. Since graduating, many of the students have gone on to work for the UK's leading boatyards, including Spirit Yachts and Woodbridge and Waldringfield Boatyards in Suffolk, Abbey Boatbuilder in Norfolk, and John's Boatworks on the Tidal Thames. The Rising Star Award, a new category for 2026, recognises emerging talent in restoration and conservancy, and as with all classic boat awards, is voted for by the public. In a ceremony at the Thames Yacht Club, the BBA students were presented with their trophy by Matthew Lees, General Manager of Woodbridge and Waldringfield Boatyards. Will Reed, BBA Director, said, "It was a hugely proud moment for me, everyone at the BBA and our partners Women in Boat Building to see our students recognised and celebrated in this way." The September 2024 cohort was truly remarkable, not just in terms of its gender equality, but because of the students' collective passion for boat building. Many of our rising stars are already working for some of the country's leading yards, whilst others are pursuing exciting careers in carpentry, joinery, and furniture making. Their talent shone out across a ceremony packed with their peers and figures and employers from across the marine industry. In our next report, the first day of the 2026 Mediterranean Superyacht Forum, held on April 28 to 29 in Palma ahead of the show, highlighted a wide range of subjects including global geopolitics, the global superyacht fleet with specific insights into the Mediterranean market, and management of superyachts as the world fleet continues to grow. Following the welcoming comments, the forum's opening session was a heavyweight global geopolitics presentation entitled, A Changing Global Order from Deglobalization to Fragmentation, given by Eduardo Saldana Liceidas. In his comprehensive presentation, he highlighted what has happened, what is happening, and offered some predictions about what might happen. He admitted that until 2 months ago, he had no knowledge of the superyacht market but had researched it since. Regarding world events, past, present, and possibly linked to the yachting market, he emphasized that both the Mediterranean and Caribbean are relatively safe areas, but that the Middle East possibly has more troubles ahead. The Arctic was identified as a future area for yachting. Next, the CHIRP Annual Digest 2025-2026 has been published. It highlights the continued need for vigilance as both traditional and emerging risks shape safety at sea. The digest reveals that the organization received 330 reports concerning safety, welfare, and compliance issues across all sectors, including commercial shipping, superyachts, fishing, pilotage, offshore installations, ports, search and rescue units, recreational vessels, and the shadow fleet. Whilst praising those who had contributed, Adam Parnell, CHIRP's Director Maritime, said, "Speaking up is not always easy, but your reports have prevented harm, corrected unsafe practices and improved working conditions for many others." While emerging risks such as unmanned surface vessels and dark fleet operations are increasingly reported, traditional hazards remain persistent, including enclosed space incidents, unsafe pilot boarding arrangements, and slips, trips, and falls. Long-standing safety issues remain a feature, including inadequate training, unsafe pilot ladders, poor mooring arrangements, and machinery-related incidents. The digest also emphasized the importance of balancing commercial pressure with safety, noting that safety should never be compromised for convenience. Across the 2025 reports, the key issues identified can be broadly grouped into several recurring safety themes. Welfare concerns remained significant, including crew abandonment, poor living conditions, pest infestations, and cases of bullying linked to shore-based management culture. These issues continued to raise concerns about compliance with MLC standards and overall crew well-being. Design-related problems were also prominent, particularly unsafe pilot boarding arrangements, poorly maintained or corroded accessways, blocked escape routes, and unsafe configurations of critical safety systems. Several reports highlighted how design choices directly contributed to operational risk. Search and rescue reports showed continuing exposure to high-risk operational environments, including lifeboat incidents, injuries during drills and rescues, equipment failures, and near misses involving vessels and personnel. Training exercises and real emergencies both revealed vulnerabilities in equipment and procedures. Engineering and technical reports highlighted hazards such as chemical exposure, engine room incidents, fires, fuel contamination, and unsafe confined space work, along with environmental non-compliance issues such as illegal waste disposal. Deck and cargo operations continued to present serious risks, including fatalities in heavy weather, container fires, lifting operation accidents, falls from height, and enclosed space injuries. Fatigue, unfamiliarity, and underreporting were also identified as contributing factors. Bridge, pilotage, and navigation issues remained a consistent safety concern, including non-compliant pilot transfer arrangements, pilot ladder failures, VDR issues, close quarters situations, and emerging risks from uncrewed surface vessels interacting with conventional shipping. You can read the document at chirp.co.uk. In our next report, the New Zealand Transport Accident Investigation Commission has released a report into an incident where several passengers were injured after a jet boat crashed into a canyon wall last year. What happened? On 25 February 2025, Commercial Jet Boat Discovery 2 was operating in Skipper's Canyon, on the Shotova River, with 11 passengers on board. Shortly after commencing the return leg of the journey, and as the boat completed a right-hand turn, its engine suddenly cut out. The driver immediately reset the ignition, but the engine would not start, so the boat had no propulsion and no thrust to provide steering control. As a result, the boat continued across the river, where it made heavy contact with the canyon wall. The boat's speed upon impact was estimated to have been between 30 and 35 kilometers per hour. The sudden stop caused the passengers to be thrown forward and resulted in one passenger fracturing their wrist and several passengers suffering deep cuts and bruising. Two adults and two children from the same family were evacuated by helicopter. Some of the passengers reported significant psychological trauma following the accident. Why it happened? The driver lost control because the engine suddenly shut down, leaving the boat with no thrust and therefore no steering capability. Tests ruled out contamination of the fuel and the lubricating oil as contributing to the accident. Relevant properties were consistent with their grade specifications. It is virtually certain that the engine shut down because part of the engine's wiring harness had chafed against a casting of the engine. The chafing exposed a wire and eventually caused a short circuit when it contacted part of the engine. This resulted in the loss of the 5-volt reference voltage shared by the critical engine sensors, and the engine shut down. The padding requirements, prescribed in the maritime rules for commercial jet boats, did not include enough detail to form a measurable standard for passenger protection. Padding of the seats and surrounds of Discovery 2 did not adequately protect the passengers from injury during a sudden stop. Passengers were not informed of, and therefore were uncertain about, what was an appropriate brace position for an emergency on board a jet boat. It is likely that some passengers suffered worse injuries due to this uncertainty. Lessons learned. Operators conducting thrill-type trips should inform passengers of the risks involved so that the passengers know when things are going wrong and how best to aid themselves. Single-engine jet boats are vulnerable to loss of control because once the engine fails, a jet boat has no steering. Safety solutions are unique to each operator. Preventive maintenance and survivability measures are critical when redundancy is not a viable option. You can read the full report via our New Zealand website at www.iiamsnewzealand.co.nz. Next, two deckhands went overboard from potting vessel Western Bay, GY123, off Spurnhead, resulting one fatality, an investigation by the UK Marine Accident Investigation Branch found. The MAIB also released a safety flyer with the investigation report following the incident. At about 08:20 on the 22nd of May 2024, two deckhands went overboard during deployment of the fishing gear from the UK-registered potting vessel Western Bay while the vessel was shooting its pots approximately 12 nautical miles southeast of Spurnhead, England. The three remaining crew were able to recover one deckhand on board, but their efforts to recover the other deckhand, James, Jimmy, Hawkey, were unsuccessful. He was recovered by another vessel about 40 minutes after entering the water. He was not breathing and, despite emergency first aid efforts, could not be resuscitated. The deceased deckhand's personal flotation device became separated from him during the recovery efforts. The investigation found that the two deckhands entered the water following an incident while manually downstacking a string of shooting pots. The first deckhand was struck, knocked onto the deck and taken overboard by the next pot in the sequence. A second deckhand entered the water as he went to assist. The investigation established that the method of shooting pots on Western Bay did not ensure the physical separation of the gear from the crew, and the vessel's risk assessments did not identify or mitigate critical hazards. The man overboard recovery system was in poor condition and was unsuitable for the recovery of an unconscious person. It was also found that regular drills were not conducted on board, and safety equipment had not been inspected and maintained. Since the accident, Western Bay's owner, Fastline Shellfish Limited, has revised and adapted the man overboard recovery system for its vessels and implemented measures to ensure crew wear their working personal flotation devices and conduct regular man overboard drills with a focus on the recovery of an unconscious person. The following safety issues were noted. There was no separation from the pots for the crew working the stack when deploying the gear, which put them at risk of entanglement, harm, and injury. The risks of going overboard after interaction with the gear had not been fully assessed or mitigated. The crew were unprepared for the emergency as they had not practiced emergency man overboard drills. The emergency man overboard recovery equipment on board was not effective for the recovery of an unconscious person from the water. Recommendations. Seafish has been recommended to review its basic health and safety awareness and risk assessment course content and develop a safety management module for its under 16.5 meters skipper's certificate, restricted, and under 16.5 meters skipper's certificate, unrestricted, courses. Fastline Shellfish Limited has been recommended to develop a safety management system that aligns with the principles outlined in Maritime and Coast Guard Agency guidance. The company has also been recommended to develop a system of shooting pots that provides physical separation from the gear for the crew. You can download the full report via our website in the news section of the site. And for our final story, the Norwegian Maritime Authority has sent out a warning following a significant increase in the marketing, sale and installation of counterfeit batteries for Jotron GMDSS products in recent years. Affected products include emergency position indicating radio beacons, radar and AIS, SART devices, as well as handheld GMDSS emergency VHF radios. Jotron added a guide on how to distinguish an original Jotron spare battery from a counterfeit Jotron battery. It also includes a list Jotron products that are in production or obsolete, as well as details on certain products, plus each product's typical counterfeits. You can download the guide via our website. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.